Welcome to the podcast of First Presbyterian Church of Marietta, where we are committed to changing lives with faith, hope, and love. We're so glad you are here.
Welcome to week two of our Lent book study. We are studying Practicing Our Faith by Dorothy Bass. The premise of this whole study is that if faith takes practice, and if we are to follow Jesus, we have to practice what he taught. So tonight we are focusing on chapter two, honoring the body. Joining us are Emily Hobel and John Knox. Emily is the FPC preschool movement teacher and a personal trainer. And Dr. Knox is an ER doctor at Kinniston Hospital and an elder in our church. There are a group of folks that are joining us online. We're excited that you're here. Welcome. Just as a reminder, if you have a question during the session, please type it into the chat and we'll get to as many as we can as the session goes on. Don't hold it for the end. Just type it in as you think of it.
Emily and John, I'm so grateful for you both all the time, but thank you especially tonight for being with us here and for sharing with us your wisdom and your experience. Last week, we dealt with chapter 12 of our book. That chapter was titled Dying Well. This was a chapter, this chapter that we've just read, chapter two, is a chapter more about the joy of being alive and in a physical body. Cassie, as you read this chapter, what were a couple key points or themes that really stuck out to you?
It helps if you unmute. The big one that stuck out to me was that Christianity is an embodied faith, and that because Jesus becomes human, and that's central to our theology, that bodies matter, and that we should pay attention to bodies because God pays attention to bodies. So if bodies matter, then what that means is that this idea that the body can be separated from the mind or the soul doesn't hold water in Christianity. That's something that the New Testament writers were really conscious of trying to work against, because that was really prevalent. The Greeks thought there was a split between body and soul, but we are called to live in solidarity with, you know, our own bodies are kind of integrated, and we're called to live in solidarity with all bodies, no matter what they look like. And so this is, I think, really urgent. We see this today in our lives as Christians when it comes to those who are marginalized. So differently abled, the ill, the weak, those who are oppressed for what you might call bodily reasons, race, sex, orientation, et cetera. So that's how this connects in my mind to Christianity. It's how this book is making the connection. And because bodies matter, and because we all claim to be made in the image of God, and that's not just our body, but also our soul, all of us, we have to reclaim the goodness of the body. Some of us feel estranged from our body. Some of us feel like it's not doing what it used to do. It doesn't look the way it maybe used to look, or how we want it to look, or what we want it to do. But our bodies are gifts from God, and they are a way that we can serve and love other people. So when we prioritize restoring that connection, we're actually doing spiritual work.
I love that. I love to reframe something like body image in a spirituality, in a spiritual sense of celebrating the body that God gave us. Because so often we become resentful, we don't like the way the body that we're in looks. And exercise can become this relentless pursuit of trying to look the way we're supposed to look. John and Emily, I know that exercise matters a great deal to both of you. It matters a medium deal to me. John, I've seen you running on the trails around Kennesaw Mountain. Emily, my wife Sarah, has joined you for some of your adult exercise classes, which she has loved tremendously. And on my way to the square on more than one occasion, I have really been delighted to take part in one of your preschool exercise classes that happened in front of the church. Today, the kids were walking around on those little buckets like they were stilts. And sometimes, you know, like you run around and then you freeze. It's awesome. Emily, what are some of the differences that you have observed in teaching preschoolers and adults when it comes to exercise?
Well, the very simple one is just that the kids aren't self-conscious. I mean, we're out in front of the street and they don't care. you know, and the adults, they don't ever want to have any attention put on them, but the kids, I mean, like you said, they're silly. They will hold funny faces and freeze into funny statues, and they just don't care. They don't know what's going on around them. They have no self-consciousness.
And they don't, it seems like they're not competing with each other. Like there's no standard they're trying to meet.
No, they are truly out there just to have fun, you know, and just to move their bodies. It's just so important for everybody to move their bodies, but kids just truly do it for the enjoyment. They don't care if they're burning calories out there. No. You know, they're out there because they want to jump up and down and see how fast they can run, and they can be as fast as a cheetah, you know. And adults, you know, they're coming with their Apple Watches and getting every single calorie that, you know, that they're counting up, and they've got to beat the number of calories that they did last time. And if we can separate exercise from, you know, the calorie burn, or, you know, how it's going to, you know, help us look, then you're kind of getting closer to the point of it. You know, the point is for your mind to have an escape. That's why I work out. For example, I swim in the mornings, and that is my meditation. Like, nobody can talk to me. Nobody can bother me. I have an hour where I'm staring at the bottom of the pool, and I just zone out, and I feel so much better. Yes, I do it for the physical benefits, but it's for the mental benefits.
I love that. John, why do you exercise?
Well, you know, I agree with Emily. It's sort of more for your inside than your outside. I mean, if you have a false hope if you think you're going to keep exercising and stay like you were when you were 25. So there's a lot more of us on our inside than there is on our outside. And you know, it's good for the heart, obviously. It's good for the muscles, but it's good for the brain and the soul. And so I do it. I love to do it on the way home from work after a challenging day, and just sort of sweat out some of the stresses of the day, reset my brain a little bit. And, you know, we talked about it, sort of a baptism by sweat. It sort of gives you a chance to be cleansed and refreshed.
I love that. Hey, you said the other day, John, that you felt like I was more worried about you during this pandemic. Like, I'd call to check on you. John, how you doing? Just want to know I'm praying for you. And you'd be like, I'm okay. I really feel like in the midst of a nationwide crisis, you have retained a sense of calm. Does that have anything to do with exercise?
It definitely has something to do with exercise. And yeah, I mean, it gives you that chance to sort of reset things. And, you know, it's been a tough year. I think everybody probably on the call would agree with that, but hopefully we got a light at the end of the tunnel now. But it definitely gives me a chance to do something other than worry over somebody's health. It gives me a chance to sort of reset my health.
I love that. Thanks.
Yeah, I guess just to kind of continue on that line, there's a lot of grief that it feels like people carry with them around their body. And this is part of the estrangement that we can feel. We talked about this earlier this week, but so, you know, sometimes our backs hurt, we can't run anymore, or we've got our feet are hurting and we can't do the thing we were doing in the past, or our rotator cuff's not working, now we can't swim. So when it comes to reclaiming joy that comes from the body, what has been y'all's experience? I mean, obviously there are things you have to grieve and just say, I can't do that anymore. But how do you keep focused on what you can do and find joy in that?
Emily, do you want to take that, or I can start?
Go ahead and start. I can add to it.
For me, you know, I'm not a young man anymore. I used to love to play basketball. I finally got where I was too slow to keep up with my sons or anybody else. And so you do kind of, it's a natural part of aging, and you have to kind of adapt. And I think, you know, we just try to do whatever we can to find something that we can do. And people have disabilities. People have, you know, injuries and illnesses that, or just children that are in the way. And so it can be hard to find that time, but I do think, you know, anything you can do to help it, even if it's just walk around the yard a little bit or whatever you can do, is definitely a benefit for the soul and the body.
Yes, I have personal experience. You know, I loved to run and I would do races. And then a couple of years ago, I had a doctor tell me I couldn't do that anymore, that I couldn't do anything repetitive, high impact. And that was a blow. You know, it was kind of sad. It was, oh, okay. So sorry. so that was tough. But there's so many things I can still do, but I've just had to adjust. And, you know, I was talking to Marshall, my husband, about this earlier today, and, you know, he has surfing. I have swimming. Other people have running. Other people have walking. Other people have biking. You just got to find what you can do. Marty says, hi, Reese. You got to find what you can do that, you know, fulfills your soul, you know, and gives you that mental break during the day and fulfills your heart, soul, body, as John said.
I love that. Emily, you used something he said when we were getting ready for this presentation. You said so many of the people who sign up for one of your exercise classes will preface themselves by saying something like, you know, I'm so out of shape, or.
Yep, about 95%, I would say, will always say, I'm not in good enough shape for this, or I'm not ready for this. The confidence level is never as high.
That's a lack of confidence.
Well, yeah, you know, they're comparing themselves. I think they're afraid that they're not going to be as good as the others. And, you know, I try to tell them that it doesn't matter. I make my classes for every single level.
Yes.
But, you know, I think they're just nervous.
Even exercise class like requires that we conquer a certain amount of vulnerability. Like it's vulnerable to sign up for an exercise class because you don't know. You feel like, well, I'm not going to be as good as everybody else there. Emily's going to yell at me and tell me I'm weak. I know you're not going to do that. I'm just kidding. But like that, our bodies require us to be vulnerable. And Doc Knox, as a doctor, like healing requires this tremendous level of vulnerability. I imagine that you are often seeing parts of a human's body that they would like to keep hidden underneath layers and layers of clothes, but you have to treat some parts of the human body that many of us would only reveal to those who we really love or really trust. Healing requires vulnerability, doesn't it?
You know, I think anytime you go to the doctor, you're at one of your most vulnerable times. I mean, the first thing we tell you to do is take all your clothes off and put on this little thin nightie. So, yeah, you have to, you're making yourself vulnerable, and you're putting yourself in the trust, particularly in the ER, somebody you've never met, you knew 15 seconds ago, and now they're poking and probing on you in all kinds of places. So, and talking about sensitive history. So, it makes you the most vulnerable. It's real similar, I think, to the end of life or newborns, where you're totally putting your trust in somebody's hands. But that trust is what allows us to come up with diagnoses and healing, that you, not only this is wrong with you, but we can do this to try to get you better. And so, but it's definitely, vulnerability is a key component of it for sure.
Have you ever had the experience where a patient was having difficulty being honest with you about what was really going on?
You see that with substance abuse a good bit. And I've had a couple of immaculate births in the ER.
Yes.
You know, I think we're vulnerable. We all have secrets that we probably don't share like we should. And so there's an appropriate time. And it's a tough habit to break.
And really, to be healed, like it's like I gotta show the doctor what's really going on.
Which sometimes it takes a few minutes of interaction or a revisit. So you know, you told me you weren't drinking, but your blood counts say different. You know, maybe that's why your liver's not doing everything it should.
To me, this is the perfect parallel to the worship service, like the prayer of confession. The worship service starts with us having to disclose our imperfection And when we confess to God that we're not perfect, then, you know, forgiveness comes. And it almost feels like that same, you're doing that same kind of thing. If someone can
don't
be
elevate
honest,
too high, Joe, let's don't elevate.
Yeah, all right. Fine.
Man. But you're right. I mean, you have to reveal what's wrong with you to get healed.
Yeah.
And wow. That way it's a good metaphor.
Thanks.
Yeah, so thinking about the worship service, one part that I think everyone misses is the greeting your neighbor. Now I forgot what, passing the peace.
It's a long, you forgot what it's called.
I've forgotten what it's called because we haven't done it we haven't done it the way we're used to doing it. One of the wonderful things about that moment in the service, if you didn't get the chance to catch up with your friend from the other neighborhood before, that's when people start catching up. And a lot of times the organist has to just start playing louder and louder for everybody to get back to their seats. But it's a moment of interaction. It's a moment where people shake hands and people touch. And so what I thought was interesting in this, this book is not written around this experience we're having with COVID, but she mentioned there was this person who would go to church and that was like their only human interaction that they would get maybe in a week if they were single and they, lived by themselves. That has just been exacerbated over the last year. And there are people now who may go weeks and weeks without having any kind of touch at all, which is, we're all longing for it. So what do y'all see about human touch that makes it so important? How do we think about that as a way of, honoring our body?
Well, one of the things they do when you in training to be a physician is they teach you the first thing you do is you come in and shake hands all the way around. And that, that suddenly ended for us last March. It's still a habit I'm having a hard time breaking. So you establish, we talked about the vulnerability, but that initial touch break is the bridge through that vulnerability that you're, now I'm going to touch you, your hand and welcome you. And now I'm going to touch you elsewhere. And so it definitely brings a challenge. And it's basically isolation, right? That we've been struggling with. People are isolated at home. People get admitted to the hospital and their families can't be with them. We've never had anything like that in my career. So it's, I think that's, COVID is really, this section on the body illustrates how, touch and being together along with exercise are things we really need. And it's put a strain on us all.
Emily, do you see preschoolers like needing that physical touch?
Yeah. And actually, I felt kind of bad because one time this year, when you're not supposed to touch everybody, they all came up and started hugging me and gave me a hug at the end. And I'm like, I don't think I can do this. I felt bad. And then I was like, well, whatever. So, they love it. And at the end of preschool, in years past, we would all put our hands in the center and like do a cheer, and
yes.
We can't do that this year. Oh yeah, they love that touch. They crave that touch.
Gosh, in the hospital, something that's broken my heart is along with so much else, hearing stories of members of our church who have had to drop someone off at the ER. And then just go back home. John, truthfully, you've been an incredible resource to several members of our church. And I want to thank you for reassuring people that their loved one's okay when you've been able to. What are you learning about the importance of having someone there with you in the hospital? What are you learning about the importance of having someone who loves you by the bedside?
Oh, those hospital rooms can get very lonely very quickly. And I think when you have somebody there, particularly if you're really young or really old, you really do need some support. And that's hard to get over a phone. So I think, thank goodness we at least have the phone so people can communicate. But when I come in and tell you something about what I found wrong with you, sometimes it's hard to hear. It can be shocking. And I think having another family member, it helps them sort of understand what's going on and where we're headed. And then you just, we're beings that need those that we love about us. And I think that's been one of the real challenges. I think we're about to hopefully change that. I saw a paper today. There's a law that's going to demand people be allowed in the hospitals. I hope we can do it safely. But it emphasizes how important it is to have your loved ones around you. The one exception we have at Kennesstone is that if we think you're passing away, if you're dying, we let the families in. I think it goes back to that vulnerability. That's a point where we recognize that there's some things that are more important than trying to be avoid COVID. That you know, there's times where we need each other's presence in vulnerable times.
I think it's interesting you said a phone call just doesn't, it's not the same. And it's really not, is it?
No.
It's part something that I heard, something that we went over last Wednesday night was sometimes we need someone there with skin on them. How could we as a church do a better job being present with people who are hurting and healing? Emily, John, y'all have ideas for us as we care for each other as a congregation?
Well, we just talked about the limitations of phones, but every Sunday when we start the service, we talk about reaching out and, you know, to a friend or a family member, you know, text them or call them. And it's still our best way to communicate right now if somebody's in the hospital. And I'm sure there's people at home, many more people at home than there are in the hospital that are isolated and lonely and need some communication, and a phone beats zero. So I do think that's something we can do more of. And then, you know, we show that we care for the body when we do some of the things we do at the church, particularly on Mondays now where we're handing out food through the food bank. I mean, that's showing care and compassion for people that are struggling.
Absolutely. I love that. Emily, this is a curveball. I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this. Are you ready? If I'm at home, are there ways that I can exercise? If I'm stuck inside the house?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, that, you know, I worked at a gym for so long that closed during COVID, and now the new trend is all these, you know, online classes, and so many of them are free. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of tired of looking at a screen, you know, so I don't always want to look at a screen when I'm working out, but, you know, that option is there. But gosh, I mean, just taking a walk in fresh air and getting outside of your house and outside of screens does wonders for your mind. Like when my kids are freaking out, I'm like, let's go for a walk. You know, let's take the dog and let's go. And it's amazing when they get back, they're like a different child. So yes, yeah, you just move your body is really the most important thing. You know, it doesn't matter really how you do it, but just that you're moving your body.
I love that. I love it. Thanks.
Yeah. And so you were talking about like just human touch. And, you know, I took it for granted having four people in this house, you know, and always having people touching me and my kids hanging on me. But you know, last April, I talked to my mom who lives alone.
Yes.
It was end of April, I guess. And she started crying and she said, I haven't touched another person in 6 weeks. And I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, I was felt awful because here I am complaining that I can't get away from my family and here she is and she can't even be around anybody. And she's social and she loves to be around others and hug and handshake and all that. But it really showed me the importance of human touch.
100%. 100%. Like during this pandemic, we're really learning to value something that we took for granted. How much connection you get just from a handshake and how much comfort a hug can give. I think that's something I'm taking away from this conversation. Cassie, what other takeaway? What's a takeaway you've got from this?
Another thought I'm having as we're talking is that there are lots of ways to starve a body. You can be starving for touch. You can be starving for food. As Christians, it seems that, again, separating the body and soul is not our calling. It's not central to our theology. It's not central to how we understand who Jesus is. What is central is that the body and soul are of a unit, of a piece, and we are to serve and love that human being. And so giving someone a Bible when they need food isn't attending to their bodily needs, and it's not honoring of them and what their need is. Giving someone food when they need a Bible is not attending to their needs, right? So we should always be mindful that what we didn't touch on is that I know John's gone many, many years down to Mexico to build houses. There's tons of mission that this church has been involved in. Some of the folks that are with us tonight have been involved in. And knowing that really matters. Like, it's not just, you know, there's one piece of self-care, but there's also that piece that we can use our hands. We say, you know, when I pray, sometimes I'll say, ask that we could be Jesus' hands and feet to those we meet or come in contact with. And I think that's true. And so it's not just about taking care of ourselves, but, and we were also talking earlier that you put your own, you know, you put your airplane mask on before you put the person next to you's mask on. You do take care of yourself, but it's all for a purpose of being able to serve and love others. And that's a key piece as well. And maybe that's another way out of this, this time that we're in. Think about ways that you can be of service. I think that's an important piece to take away as a practice. Those are some of the thoughts I had. Errol Eckford actually posted a Bible verse that was, I'll just read for y'all. This is Romans 12:1. He said, just as kind of a reflection on what we're talking about, "I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship." And so we're called to think of our bodies as a living sacrifice, meaning like, God, how are you going to let me be an embodied Christian today? And what does that mean? I thought of homework for those that like homework.
Come on.
We're talking about spiritual practices. So how do you put this into practice? How do you take this next week and do something about this? This is the homework I thought of. You're welcome to do this with me, along with me, if you'd like, or think of your own homework if this doesn't fit you. But find the biggest mirror that you can in your house every morning before you leave your house, and take a moment to pray over your body, thanking God for the body you have, for what it can do, how it can serve and love others, the power that you have within it to do good things. And also thank God for the body that you have and all it can't do, and how those limitations cultivate empathy in us, and they allow us to experience the generosity and care of others. Mm-hmm. And then it also reminds us that we're wholly dependent on God. In the end, you know, we live in a broken world, and certainly, you know, we might feel like, gosh, this doesn't feel like the best I could be. But it's what it is. It's what God's given us for the day, and it's the gift. And that's a gift that we should be thankful for.
I love that, Cassie.
So I guess that wraps up our session. Thank you all for being with us tonight. Thanks for the folks that are joining us online on Facebook. With special appreciation to John and Emily for sharing their experiences. We are coming back next week. We'll be at the same time, same channel. Covering chapter 5, saying yes and saying no. So read that in advance, and we'll look forward to that conversation. And until then, we'll be praying for you and for your whole bodies, and praying that we can all find some peace in our relationships with our bodies, and that we can find ways to consider our bodies a gift and a gift to serve. And we're praying God's blessings on you until then.
Amen. Good night, y'all. Thank you.
This podcast is a ministry of First Presbyterian Church of Marietta. Come join us Sundays at 189 Church Street, Marietta, Georgia, or visit us online at fpcmarietta.org.